Yes, you're wrong. The podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate, hate to love. And we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Yes, we're here to talk about
joy and ennui.
Or ennui?
Anxiety and sadness? I don't know.
which of us?
How do you identify?
Well, I'm trying to think of which of these characters I most relate to.
Who's
I think I'm probably disgust. Most of the time.
That's fair. I co-sign that. I can see that.
You have ennui energy for sure, though.
I don't know, though, because I care a lot about a lot of people and things.
I guess that's true.
Hating most of them. So it's either like, it's either anxiety or anger. I don't know. I just
Yeah, I can see you as angered as well. Mm-hmm. That tracks.
I mean, it feels wrong to say because I do think I have a lot of joy too, but we're just
well, we all have Everyone all of it. These things. Yeah. Yes.
We all have a little bit. But no, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. I also feel like I wasn't really sure what Io Edebiri's like envy character, like what was going on with her. She was mostly just like a sidekick. She didn't seem that envious to me, but I do feel like envy is an emotion that I also, you know, traffic in regularly, especially as of late. So that's probably another one.
And you're just envy.
Yes. No, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The green-eyed monster or whatever it is. I was like, yes, this is me. Yeah, we're talking about Inside Out 2, the long-awaited sequel to the original Inside Out movie, which came out in 2015. So almost 10 years
upsetting.
Now.
Yeah, very upsetting to know that. Because I remember very clearly seeing this.
I'm like, if it came out in 2015, I was living in living in New York at that point?
Yeah.
Maybe I hadn't moved here yet because I moved in the fall of 2015 and I think that probably came out in the summer. So I guess I was probably back in Michigan still.
Yeah, yeah.
But you would have been here.
Yeah, I was. Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Do you remember
really
which theater
film,
you saw
one of
it
my
in?
Favorite. I was at the Lincoln Center.
Oh.
Most regularly. So
I love that theater.
Yeah. It's a classic. It's a good one.
It's
it would have been. What would it have been, like 78th?
Oh, that like the 84th Street one? Yeah. I don't think I've ever actually been there, but...
It was the first one with reclining seats. It was a big deal.
Okay.
First AMC, so...
Fascinating.
Very easy.
And did you like Inside Out, the original, when it came out?
Oh, I loved Inside Out, the original. Okay. I was a huge fan. I mean, Bing Bong brought me to tears. Like, I wasn't into a lot of animated films at that, like in my early adulthood. I was just kind of like, I couldn't get into them, but that really spoke to me. So yeah, you could say I was a fan.
I really liked Inside Out. I don't remember having like as visceral a reaction to it as something like Coco, which I really, really, really adored, that came out around a similar time. But I definitely think that Inside Out is one of the better Pixar movies of sort of like the more modern era,
Disney era, yeah.
Yeah. Because I think that they have struggled a lot since then to really find something that works in that same capacity. And they've tried in various forms and it hasn't quite hit. And so it makes sense that they went back to this movie, but I was nervous because I feel like they've been doing a lot of sequels lately and most of them have not been great. If you think about like the Buzz Lightyear spinoff, there was Finding Dory, Incredibles 2, which was, you know, like, okay, obviously both the Cars sequels, Toy Story 4, I kind of hated. So,
yeah.
But this felt a lot more warranted, I think. Like, it made sense as a sequel, and it made sense to be like, well, what if we saw this this girl's mind when she was, you know, in elementary school? Like, what does the mind of a teenager look like? And let's delve into that a bit more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I think is a very interesting premise.
Yeah, no, it lends itself to a story more than, like, Finding Nemo take two. Like, what, you know, what's going to happen there? This was a natural progression. And while, you know, the thing that gave me the most pause was the fact that they didn't get two of the original cast members back.
Yes.
Mindy Kaling. For Disgust, yours truly.
Yes.
Which I did not enjoy, and I felt was very noticeable because they got someone who was, like, basically trying to mimic the tone and expression. I don't know. So that ruffled me the wrong way because they gave Amy Poehler a huge payday to come back and then were offering just pennies to the rest of the cast, which is rude and not very joyful. So I was sort of like, well, that feels like cash grabby. Like, you just want your big star, blah, blah, blah. But then, you know, it took 8 years to make. So I guess they thought about it a little bit. So good for them.
Yeah. And Bill Hader also didn't come back. And so they got Tony Hale to play that role, which I do, like, makes sort of, like, works fine, I think. Whereas the Mindy Kaling of it all, I think, was noticeably absent.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess let's talk about the elephant in the room, which is that the main character is definitely a lesbian. Yes? Can we all agree on that? Was that not everyone's takeaway from this? And that she had a crush on the other,
the
older girl with the red hair.
She might have a lot of exploring to do. They might have a lot of exploring to do. It's impossible to fit them into a simplistic phrase like lesbian.
I guess that's true.
Maybe they're
bisexual.
Bicurious.
How does sexuality work in the Inside Out universe? Because horniness has not been introduced as an emotion yet.
Yeah. I don't know if that would be an emotion. I think that'd be a conglomeration, right? I mean, that's the trouble, right? It's like, you get anxiety, but then you also have... What is
fear?
It? Fear? Yeah. Which they're different, and I like how they present them differently here. But then... Yeah. Well, it's also interesting that they decided that all the characters in other people's minds have the same gender identity as the main characters. So the mom's characters are all women, I mean, female presenting, and the dad's, you know, brain characters are all male presenting. And the directors have said that it didn't mean anything beyond that, except that for the main characters, you needed differentiation so that it wasn't all just like one person, one visual. But it does make for some interesting discussions around, yeah, she's still figuring her identity out, you know?
Oh, interesting. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
So we think that she could perhaps be non-binary.
I mean, yeah, it's like anyone's guess, you know, life is a journey. So
I do love, like, queer readings of Pixar movies and such. Like, I guess it's not Pixar, but whenever we had talked about Mulan and you were like, oh, there's all of these trans people who love Mulan, I was like, wait, I never thought about that before. And then I have a friend who's a lesbian and she loves Monsters, Inc. And she's like, yeah, because it's basically like two gay dads adopting a daughter. And I'm like, wait, I love this. Yeah. No wonder I love Monsters, Inc. so much.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
Inside Out 2 is non-binary representation. Mm-hmm. We'd love to see it.
Yeah, exactly. There's some flexibility to be had. There's some exploration. And I think that's what makes it an interesting framework to not only talk about feelings, but also how you change and stuff. And, like, I think they do a good job of that with this movie. Obviously, the first movie was very much about her realizing, like, sadness doesn't need sidelined in the same way that things can be bittersweet, that there's power in acknowledging both emotions and that you need them both to really come to a sense of self, which is pretty, like, simple, straightforward idea. It's like, you know, joy is forced onto an adventure with sadness. and things go awry when neither of those are present in the control room, blah, 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 blah. They find their way back and they realize they can work together. Very cute. So this, yeah. this had the issue of being like, okay, how do we set ourselves apart from the first movie while still existing in the very contained world of one singular girl's mind? And how can these emotions battle each other, but also work it out? So,
yeah, the, I think it was very, a good move to move them into like puberty and be like, okay, what are the emotions like then? So we jump several years in the future and she's like on that cusp between middle school and high school. And they introduce this new set of emotions and they sort of tease throughout the movie that as you get older, like there are more emotions that come in. There's the nostalgia character who keeps like popping her head in. They're like, no, we're not old enough for you yet. Like you'll come in later. Which is, I think, an interesting premise because you could keep theoretically making these movies and, you know, as you get older and have to.
Oh, Amy Poehler has a plan for that. This is her Before Sunset set thing. She's like, let's get her in college. Let's see her with her first child. Let's have her go through menopause. So coming to a theater near you in 25 years.
I do think that like the romance angle, which is again not really present in this movie at all, unless nascently for the like red streaked hair hockey team captain girl. That is emotional turmoil, is having a crush on somebody. And I think that that would be really fun to watch in the Inside Out space and watch all of these emotions deal with that. But the main addition for this movie, there's four new emotions, but the one that has the biggest impact is anxiety, who sort of becomes the villain of this a little bit in that, you know, Joy is running things. Everything seems to be going fine. Then these four new emotions come in. And anxiety is like, oh, you're going to hockey camp. We can't just be like having fun. We need to impress people. We need to be thinking about things proactively. We need to be thinking about the future. Like this could set things up for us in high school. Like this could be a big deal. And going through all those anxious thoughts that we have in as we get older and realize, oh, like we need to be planning for things and bad things happen to people and you lose some of that sense of innocence. And so it's this tug of war between Joy and sort of a more innocent sense of self. And then this like forecasting and do people think I'm cool? And, you know, it's envy and ennui and bringing all of that in, which I think made a lot of sense. Yes, and embarrassment. Well, because also I think since the original movie, we've had a lot more of the mental health, self-care, wellness dialogue going on, which I think has been really important. And so you can see that in this by the fact that anxiety is in this. I feel like in 2015, like obviously people had anxiety and yes, some people were talking about it, but it was not as common of a thing to be discussing as it is now. Would you agree?
I mean, no, but maybe that's because I was an anxious person. So,
oh, okay.
I see your point, I guess, generally, but I think that's like been an emotion tied to puberty, especially of just like the.
Like a new emotion.
No, yeah.
But like, I think having it be so clearly labeled, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate that they didn't like therapize it too much and it was still very like, you know, geared towards kids. So there was a lot of humor around how anxiety reveals itself and how, you know, they decided to tuck away the original emotions because they have these more complex ones to handle it. So not only is joy sent away, not only is sadness sent away, but also disgust and anger and fear are all replaced by these more complicated, like shy and envy and anxiety. So it was like an interesting concept. I overall felt like it was a good movie. It didn't necessarily like blow my mind, which I think I'm in the I'm in the minority there. Like, I think a lot of people really loved this film.
I thought it was really clever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also pretty short.
Yeah.
Like, it's only 96 minutes. So it's you kind of breeze through it.
Yeah.
And I think it works really well. But it also, I don't think, has the emotional, like, oomph of some of Pixar's other movies or even Inside Out 1. Like, there was no Bing Bong moment kind of in this.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I didn't necessarily think it was a revelation, but I did think, especially after a bunch of movies that have been not great from Pixar, that this was a nice, like, return to form. It honestly reminded me more of, like, their early stuff, like A Bug's Life, Monsters, Inc., Finding Nemo, that has emotion to it, but is much more, like, fun and funny.
Quirky, yeah.
And less, like, we're going to stab you in the heart, like the Up, Wall-E, Toy Story 3, like Soul kind of lineup of movies that they have.
No, so, that's fair.
I liked it. I thought it was strong, but not... Yeah, I'm, like, in the grand scheme of Pixar movies, like, is this one of the top five? Like, I don't think so.
Yeah. No, because it was, like, there was a lot of cleverness. Like, I really liked the play on words with the world building, like, the sarcasm and the brainstorm and the stream of consciousness. Like, they were having a lot of fun kind of expanding the inner workings of a brain. And so, like, there's a lot of humor there. I think I wanted more out of anxiety, I guess, as someone who has anxiety. But I also recognize that that's sort of just, like, this is a very accessible piece of art to children, and I think that has value in it, right? Like, they don't have to do everything in this movie, because it's just, like you said, an 80-minute film that, you know, accomplishes and attempts, you know, something interesting and maybe explored in other children's films. So I liked that. I appreciated that. I do feel like I'm curious about the decision to make Riley such a people pleaser, or sort of this, like, you know, she's very driven by her success, or, like, and I don't know. I think the thing that stuck out to me most in this movie was this whole concept of Joy sending her embarrassments or failures all the way to the back of the brain so she wouldn't have to think about them, and, like, how that helped shape her maybe more fragile, what do they call it? Sense of self.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was what, like, the anxiety stuff, whatever, I enjoyed. But overall, that was the thing that, like, got my attention, because I was like, I was really interested in how that would shift your person, like, having this sort of, like, I'm only ever great. I'm such a great friend. I've never done anything wrong. I'm always so nice. My parents love me so much. And there's never, ever, ever any room to be like, oops, I made a mistake, or, oh, that was embarrassing, you know? And I think that is more maybe relatable to a lot of children in our generation, where we did grow up with the constant validation in some ways, or, like, you're so special, and kind of how once you hit a failure after being fed that, how quickly you kind of spiral out. So I thought that was interesting, and kind of made me curious about who wrote this and why they made Riley the character that she is, because obviously, you know, it could have gone any other way, you know, like, I don't know.
Yeah, because she is kind of I think you do turn into sort of a pick me a bit if that's what you're going through life with, of, like, not, like, forgetting all of the embarrassing moments and that, and just thinking, like, oh yeah, I'm great. Like, because a big part of this is sort of these, like, core beliefs. Is that what they're called? So, like, these memories that they put into this, like, pool sort of in Riley's brain, and they form these, like, core beliefs that she has, like, I am special, my parents love me, and that anxiety, but Joy has only basically been putting good stuff in there.
Yeah.
And then anxiety starts putting things down there that are like, I am not good enough, like, I need to work harder, that kind of thing. And but then in the end, it's sort of all of the beliefs fall into that pool, or like all of these memories do. And so then she gets like a core belief system that's built on all of these memories and not just one selected by either anxiety or joy, which is, I think, how you have a more healthy sense of self. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's fascinating, I think, because early on in the movie, she's obviously sending these bad ideas to the back of the mind. And I think me as an adult was like, wait, that's not a good idea. Like, I is going to cause trouble. Like, this is how you get trauma and stuff later on that's just like buried in the back of your mind. But it wasn't necessarily presented that way as a bad thing. And I didn't necessarily think that they dealt with that concept in a super clear way at the end of the movie. Yeah. Like, all of the memories come in, and then she does get this sense of self that's, you know, has a lot of different things going on in it, and that's presented as good.
Yeah.
But I think what Joy is doing isn't necessarily called out a ton as being bad, potentially.
Yeah, it's hard because they have like a very specific, you know, end goal they have to get to. It's a movie, it's contained. And I think it's also complicated when they are comparing it to the first. So you can't have the same beats of like, Joy realizes something, Joy apologizes, Joy hugs, everything's better. And so they seem to be actively trying to avoid this, oh, we have to go and do this thing I don't want to do. And yet you do end up repeating a lot of the same things because the crew does have to go on a journey and they do have to have these moments of self-reflection and discovery. And then they have to like help each other get back to it. So it does start to feel formulaic in a way, which works because, again, it's a children's movie and I don't think it has to do everything at once. But I do think that's like the piece where I was like, well, wait, let's like revisit. Like, let's talk about this. The ending felt a little rushed, I think, is my main. I was like, okay, yeah. I mean, that makes sense. But I'm also like left, I don't know, disappointed, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I think that the anxiety, it's mostly sort of a movie about kind of overcoming anxiety. Like, that's the main emotional plot point, I think. Like, the other emotions are definitely all kind of secondary to that. And yeah, I think that there was, like, this is a rare occasion where I think the movie could have had an extra 5-10 minutes added on and it would have been okay. Yeah. Like, it was very short to begin with. And I think that when you're dealing with such complex concepts, there you can, you know, build that out a bit more.
Yeah.
Because I also think, like, the envy as a character and also sort of, what is it, shame or
embarrassment,
were both sort of not, like, fully fledged and were more there to be involved in plot points in the mind rather like with joy and sadness and that than they were as actual kind of like emotions. Like, I thought Anhui was a more full-fledged like supporting character and was very funny whenever she got involved. And also I love Adele Exarchopoulos' voice performance here. But yeah, and also I think that Mai Hawk did a really good job as anxiety. I thought her voice performance was great as well, but the movie, it felt like some of those characters, like, I would have liked Envy developed a bit more, especially when you have Io doing the voice for that, where it's like, okay, she's very competent, like, but why is she just like a sidekick almost, like,
right? And how does she tie into anxiety? Like, it wasn't always clear why Envy was involved,
right?
Because it seemed more about like, I need friends, not I want to be them, you know? I don't know. It's like, it was there, but it was like almost too pulled back to really count as a real personification of Envy.
Where I feel like Envy and anxiety in real life go hand in hand often in a big way.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was really like, I think part of the problem is that, you know, with sequels, there is this sort of indulgence in what people liked and in what, and in playing with the world you've come to love. And so it did feel like they were more concerned maybe with these, oh, the sarcasm, like, you know, and showing a huge, which I think is funny and fun, but it does kind of come at the cost of maybe a more complex story. Or like, I liked the, I don't remember what they call it, but using her imagination against her, Because that like the most realistic portrayal of anxiety, where she's just having her mind like make up every worst case scenario and just feeding it to her, and that's like causing the panic. And then Joy's able to come in and the other characters and be like, well, let's imagine another way this could go. And it, you know, is a happy way, or she meets a cat, or, you know, and I think that was fun and clever and a good show of how your emotions can actually work together to create like a happier, you know, your anxiety doesn't have to be your enemy. It can feed your better emotions of joy or peace or hope. And so I feel like if they'd circled back to that somehow, but instead the ending finds anxiety sort of in the corner, but often put aside, and Joy's like, oh, I've got this. Like, you can just take a break and like get in her massage chair and drink her smoothie or whatever.
Well, yeah, because it sort of feels like with sadness in the last movie, they made it seem they really showed how important sadness is, where anxiety sort of mostly just seems like a negative thing, which I think is true kind of in life. But also, if it's going to be part of your brain, like, I think there needs to be some more takeaway that's, because also anxiety does, like, to a certain degree, I think is healthy, and that it helps you think about things ahead and thinks about problems. Yeah. And, you know, like, oh, you're going to be prepared for this test because you're anxious about failing it, and you don't want to be one of those people who shows up and just hasn't studied. So I think there are elements with that it's helpful for. And I don't think that they necessarily showed those.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it would have been helpful to, you know, because in the adult brains, they don't have any of these other emotions, which, you know, whatever they, I think they maybe wanted to spare the surprise or keep it contained or not like do all this other stuff for parents that are very, very, very secondary to the show. But I think in the end, it would have been helpful to see like the mother's brain and have anxiety like jump up and be like, oh my gosh, like puberty's happening. Like, this is what we've been worried about, you know, like something to show that it is always there and it will always be a part of you, but like the varying degrees of when it matters and how to like process it, you know?
Yeah. Well, and also now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, envy is actually an emotion that's like almost always negative. Like, I'm trying to think of an example when that is helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, the way they do it is very cutesy and like, oh yeah, we do want friends. But I think, yeah. And I honestly liked that they didn't make one of the emotions like a villain in the traditional sense, where they're a problem to be, you know, removed. And so while the easy thing would be to make like envy the big green monster, I like that they instead were like, these emotions just get out of hand, but it doesn't mean they're wrong or they're bad, or like, you know, it doesn't mean you can't function with them. So I appreciate the resistance to casting a true villain, but I do think it was kind of like, I don't know if they knew what to do with anxiety in the end, which I acknowledge is me nitpicking a story that's very sweet and gives children language that they might not have had otherwise.
Yeah, I also think anxiety looks very different for a 13-year-old than it does for an adult.
Yeah.
Because when you're younger, you are, it's so much more focused on like, oh, like, is this person gonna like me? Like, am I gonna sit at the table at lunch? Like that kind of stuff, rather than more of like existential anxiety.
Yeah.
Or at least I guess it was for me. Most of my anxiety growing up was related to being gay. So yeah, like, there wasn't really much. Yeah, I'm like, there wasn't really much room for anything else going on. Like, my mind was about 85% like, do people think I'm gay?
Yeah.
And then the other 15 was like, when is Lady Gaga's album coming out?
Yeah.
So my brain would have been a very fascinating portrait for this movie. However, they did not pick me.
Yeah.
Perhaps not quite as universal as Riley wanting to make a hockey team, but, you know, teach their own.
Yeah, I mean, it was honestly like the sweetest part of the story is that she has these two best friends. They're on their middle school hockey team together. And then it's announced that actually they're zoned into a different school, so they're not going to go to high school together. And like that was like really sad and scary and like relatable to see that panic and that like sudden insecurity and that wave of just sadness and like loss and whatnot. But yeah, I did lose interest when it became like, okay, well, I'm gonna become the best hockey player because that just was not a relatable concern to me.
Oh, yeah. No, me either.
I was like, what are you going to learn reading this diary? You don't have to do all this. You know, it's fine. But that's the point. And I respect that.
Yeah, the sports stuff, I'm always like, why do we care that much about getting on the hockey team? Like, couldn't we just be friends with these people in regular life without having to play hockey? But
yeah, well,
whatever. I guess she was into it. I mean, again, perhaps a non-binary lesbian adjacent individual, so they can like hockey.
Yeah. How did you like the personification of a panic attack, anxiety attack?
See, I don't think I've ever had a panic attack. Mm-hmm. And so it worked for me. Like, I looked like it made sense. I thought it seemed true to form. I don't think I've had one to actually speak to that as a, like, a personal experience.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's sort of the climax. That's the crescendoing moment where they're finally making it back to the headquarters and anxiety has just lost control. And so now she's just this tornado destroying the space. And I thought that was really, like, powerful and sweet to see Joy have to break through it and kind of find anxiety, who's not actually doing it out of, you know, nefarious reasons or ways, but is just stuck in the same cyclone, kind of crying. And I was like, oh, so sad. So I did like the detailed work here. It was clear that they like cared about the concept. And I'm glad it resonated with a lot of people.
Well, because I do think a lot of people, a lot of young people do have panic attacks, and they're very scary, and you don't know why they're happening.
Yeah.
When you're 13, and especially if you're not in a, growing up in a household where there's a lot of language for that.
Yeah. So she's allowed to find Joy in the end, and Joy continues to run Riley's life, so good for her.
You know what my favorite part of this movie was, or one of my favorite parts, I guess, was they get put down in like a vault of,
oh yeah,
like old memories, and they run into this like video game character that she used to have a crush on, which I thought was so funny. And just like the way that he, like, his, the different animation style and how he like is trying to like jump over the door but like can't, I thought was really clever.
Yeah.
And then there's like a Blue's Clues Dora the Explorer like character that they call back a couple of times, and I thought that was really clever, and again in a different animation style. So I liked that they had some, like, I think really clever moments that were then depicted well in the different art schemes that they have, because like Spider-Verse obviously does that, I think, in a really smart capacity, and I like that other people are now playing around with that.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, yeah, this is on track to become the first $1 billion movie of 2024, so it's not Garfield. Yeah, that's what a headline said.
I know it's doing really well, so that's good.
I think its second weekend like trumped Barbie's second weekend. I don't know. It's just,
oh yeah, it's made $724 million.
Yeah.
And it's only been out a couple of weeks. I don't know what all like international territories and stuff it's out in, because that's when you really start to rack up the points. But it's also got a 91% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is very high. So
No, it's a great success story.
All good things, mostly for...
Congrats to Amy Poehler.
Inside Out 2. Yeah, but I mean, like, she didn't write this or anything. No. She's just the person who they've got dragged around doing all the press for it.
Yeah, no, I know.
Which is working.
It's working.
You're like, I hate her.
I don't enjoy her press. You're like, justice for Mindy Kaling. She just grates on me these days. She feels very, like... I don't know. There's this like antagonism to her energy, especially when she's surrounded by youthful creatures such as Maya and
etc. I feel like she always seems like she's having like a good time. And she, like, I know that she is like obviously rich and powerful and whatever, but I do think that she seems like, of the celebrities that we have in this world, one of the more like normally kind of people.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just a vibe I get. It's just a vibe. Okay. I don't enjoy it.
Okay.
After so many great press tour cycles, I was like, okay, I'm not liking this energy. I scroll past those.
I mean, we have been treated to some great press cycles as of late. So it's hard when you're up against Madame Web and, you know.
And Bridgerton, which Bridgerton. You don't care about, but it was great.
Yeah, no. Well, although I don't watch Bridgerton anymore. I only watched the first season, but I did go on a deep dive the other day of trying to figure out which siblings they had covered and which ones they weren't, and then if any of them were going to be gay, and then apparently the next one is maybe gay, some girl.
Speaking of queer awakenings, yeah.
Yes. So I was like, okay, interesting. Will I be watching? No, but... Glad that people are and that they're enjoying it.
You just wanted to make sure. Yeah. You're like the queer police. You're just like, okay, well, what have we got going on here?
Because I did watch the first season, I was like, okay, I'm interested like who these people end up with.
Yeah.
And I was like, and I feel like they're going out of order in the... Yes. They're not going in age order, but then they're not going in the book order either. And then I was reading like about the differences between the books and the TV shows, which I always find fascinating. House of the Dragon is back, which I'm not watching, but I'm editing content for. So I sort of know what happened.
Yeah.
And we, and we're doing these articles on like the difference between the books and the book and the movie or the TV show. And it's weird the things that they keep and the things that they don't. And it's like, why?
Yeah.
Would you get rid of that? That seems like it would have made a good TV moment. And then why would you have added this in instead?
I know. I want to be like...
Fascinating.
I want to be... I don't know the term. I don't want to write scripts. I don't want to write dialogue. But I do want to help storyboard. I want to... I don't even need to run the show. I just need to be consulted about the show. You know what I mean? Like, I just need someone to be like, okay, give me a big overview thoughts. And I think I could clean up like 80% of television shows out today. Like, I really do. I believe in myself and I think I have good ideas. I just don't have interest in being the one to make them happen.
And this is what happens, folks, when you send all of your bad memories back to mind. All of a sudden you are drunk with power.
I am perfect. I am funny.
You was smart. You was kind. You was important.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, in House the Dragon, there's a scene where they send, in the books, they send this assassin to kill the queen's, you know, son or whatever. And the assassin goes, pick which one of your kids you want to kill. Nice. And she chooses one. And then they say, sorry, we're not going to kill that one. We're going to kill the other one. And now that kid knows for the rest of its life that you wanted it dead. Which I'm like, very cinematic.
Sign me up.
I'm like,
inside out like, three.
I'm like, if I'm reading that in a book, I'm like, oh, that's a great scene of a TV show. Yeah. No, well, they got rid of that whole complete thing. Instead, he goes in the room and goes, which of the kids is a boy and which of the kids is a girl? Which it's like, okay, well, we can figure that out pretty quickly if they're babies, you know, just like lift up the diaper.
Oh my gosh, child
and
abuse.
She's like, that one's the son, and he's like, okay, and they kill it. And I'm like, what? Like, why? Like, why?
Well, because Sophie's Choice already did that, and you can't like do a Sophie's Choice anymore. It's been done.
I feel like it's been long enough where you could do it again. We haven't had Sophie's Choice in years.
In this day and age, in this era,
Sophie's Choice and this economy, the anxiety would have been running rampant if you had to do a Sophie's Choice.
That's how it should have ended, is just anxiety having to choose which emotion to kill off. And then we'll see. We'll see.
And the answer is definitely envy. Sadness.
Oh, sorry.
R.I.P.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, good movie, I guess.
Yeah, that's all I had to say.
There's not a ton to talk about here. Unless we want to start getting into our own emotions. Tell me about the last time you experienced depressing sadness, Shelby.
Well, it was actually 2 hours ago. And
it was when I realized that today I had to podcast with you. And you said, oh, we'll be bringing up Taylor Swift. And you're going to have to confront her recent events.
No, that's the biggest source of joy for me, Matt. So thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
That's the movie. That's the Inside Out 3 that no one's talking about. She becomes a podcaster.
Yes. Okay. Yes. You know what? I think that could work. I think that's the new YouTuber, right? So instead of eighth grade Gucci, it's ninth grade podcast.
Great podcast. Do a lot of like teenagers have podcasts?
I hope not. I don't think so.
I'm like, I it's feel like
too
no.
expensive. Yeah.
I think, is it? I'm like, I think well, it's I mean, mostly old people.
Yeah.
I feel like everybody over 45 has a podcast, but like, I think the young people are doing TikToks.
No, you're right. I mean, we're young and we're doing podcasts, so we're very hip and very cool.
We started very young doing podcasts.
Yeah. 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 So watch out.
Okay. Well, now I'm yawning.
Good sign.
Good times. Good times. This is great. We'll be back next week to discuss.
I'm so excited. A Quiet Place.
Yeah, which I'm going to need to somehow watch during Pride Week festivities.
There's nothing gayer than A Quiet Place, right?
I guess. Is it long? Do we know how long it is?
I don't imagine. The last two have been like short.
I'm like, I would love a quick like 90 minutes.
Speaking of great press, I mean, yes, that's another one. I love everything.
Hour 39.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. It's easy. It's a lunch break, basically.
Yeah, exactly. No, Lupita's great. And also, I'm excited to see Joseph Quinn do his post Stranger Things stuff.
Yeah. I can't wait. I hope it lives up to my expectations.
It won't, but you know,
exciting. I can't handle another disappointment.
Nonetheless, no. What I think we need to be putting all of our hopes in, actually, which this is a shock to me, just as much as it is to anybody who's listening to this, I think is Twisters.
Ugh,
I think Twisters is the movie that will save the summer.
I really want it to. I really do. I rewatched Volcano this weekend, which I told you about at the Liberia Tar Pits, and I miss movies that were just like good without concerned about being something great, you know? Like
you know what else is coming out that I'm excited about? Maxine.
Okay. I hope that's going to
be
for
a good
too.
Horror movie.
I do. I hope you enjoy it. Sounds awful to me personally, but I hope
and
it's great.
Remember, at the end of the year, we all can be looking forward to Joker 2. And that will be a press tour that talks all press tours. Lady Gaga talking about the prop wine.
No.
Lady Gaga.
No.
Hordes of flies descending upon her.
My depression's taking over again. My sadness is coming out now. It's
my joy is hyped up, baby. Excited. No, don't let sadness get the best of you. Don't let fear or anxiety take over.
Yeah.
Because remember, Shelby, if there's 99 people, if there could be 100 people in the room and 99 of them don't believe in you, but I believe in you. And
thank
I'm the
you.
Only one you
oh
need.
Oh my gosh. Thank
I'm
you.
I'm the Bradley Cooper.
You're the Bradley Cooper. I'm Lady Gaga.
She's Lady Gaga.
Oh my gosh. Wow. That's how I know you love
I'm
me.
I'm probably
thank
gay.
You so much.
You're. A little weird.
I'm not,
it
but I
great.
Wish I was. Yeah.
You have fibromyalgia.
Yeah.
You know, it works out. Okay. Well, this has been great.
Yeah.
We'll be back next week. Thank you all for listening. And yeah, we'll see you around. Bye.